Hi everybody, my name is Adam. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, I'm confused now. No, Lauren had asked me to give her a coin, and I thought I was doing that first, but that's okay. I just got to kind of get my brain back into the groove of things. Or get it out, I should say, because that's usually the way it works. If my head's involved, then I usually don't say what needs to be said. I say what I think makes me look good, and that's never good. I don't know. I guess the best way to start is with this. You know, I spent a lot of years coming around the fellowship, and I couldn't get sober. And, you know, people told me, make 90 and 90. So I did 180 meetings in 90 days. They told me to get a home group. I had a home group. They told me to get a commitment. I got a coffee commitment. I even chaired meetings. I was very involved in the fellowship when I came around. I had nowhere else to go. So I got very active. I got very involved. But the problem was that I couldn't stop drinking. And I would get a day. I would get a week. I think the longest I ever had was 4 months, but 90 days or 89 days of that was in the Salvation Army. So, you know, on the streets, I think the longest I ever had sober was right around 30 days, maybe 60 at the most. And I was never able to put any time together. And I did everything they told me to do. I got sober in an area. I got sober in North Jersey. And they didn't really believe in step work. They did at a certain point. You know, you were supposed to be... we used to have this beginner step meeting. And it was a 12 and 12 meeting. And you read steps 1 week, step 2 the next week, step 3 the next week, and then back to step 1. And you were supposed to stay in that meeting for 2 years until you were allowed to go to the other room and read about the 4-step. And... that was their idea of doing step work. And people would share what they thought the steps meant. They would share, you know, when I get to this step, I believe I'll do it this way. And things like that. Nobody ever sat me down and explained to me what this process was. And there was this old dude. His name was Bill. He was out of Bayonne, New Jersey. And he used to show up at this candlelight meeting where all the young, crazy people went to on a Saturday night. It was one of those meetings that had no boundaries. You know, it was candlelight. It started at 11 and it went to like 3 a.m., depending on what the crowd wanted. And you could talk about anything you wanted and, you know, and all kinds of stuff happened there. And you know, I'm young. I was in my early 20s. And I used to go there, and Bill used to show up, and this is back when you could smoke in meetings, and you couldn't see even when the lights were on, you know, because Bill had this cigar that was like that long, but Bill would talk about grabbing drunks off the street and putting them in his house and reading a big book to them, and I had no idea what he was talking about, because I'd read this book. I went to the big book meetings. I identified with the jaywalker. I identified with the stories in the back of the book. But nobody ever talked about it as if it was an instruction manual or a textbook or anything like that. It was like a novel to read, and you could relate. And I didn't get what he was saying at that point, but he always talked about that. And then what he said one other thing, and he said sobriety is a gift from God. And what you do with it is your gift back. And that phrase haunted me. Because every time I relapsed, I would hear his voice. And in that last run, I heard his voice every day. And it drove me insane and it forced me back into the rooms. You know, it's kind of funny because I work in treatment and I always tell my clients that it's not my job to get you clean. It's my job to fuck up your high. You know, that's what I do. You know, I hope, I pray that something I say sits in the back of your head, and the next time you go back out, you hear my voice. And that's what I, that's because that's what Bill taught me, because that's what worked for me. But on September 6th, 1994, it wasn't a bad day. You know, the night before wasn't anything extravagant. Yeah, it was my birthday, but it wasn't, you know, we didn't do anything crazy. It wasn't, I didn't get locked up. I didn't crash any cars. I didn't, you know, wake up all bloody and damaged. Those things have happened in the past. But it was just another day. And I remember I was walking down Kearney Avenue in Kearney, New Jersey. And this overwhelming thought came that I'm back here again. And that's all it took. That's all it took. You know, it's kind of interesting because I hear people talk about bottoms being different. Everybody's bottom's different. And I was like, I disagree. I think the circumstances of the bottom are different. But the bottom itself is just, you know, when an individual goes like this, I can't. That's the bottom. That's it. And that's what that day brought me. I woke up and I realized that I can't do this no more. I'm done. And I walked about 4 miles to a meeting. I stole a big book. I've since made amends. But, you know, I got a sponsor that day. You know, granted, that sponsor told me to call him every night at 6 o'clock, and that's all he ever did. But I did. I got a sponsor. I became willing. And what I got the first go around was mail order recovery. Kind of like the founders. I've always got a kick out of that because my first experience with the 12 steps was what some of those founders got. You know, they read the book, they deciphered the code, and they did some of it and was given the grace, because that's what I did. You know, my sponsor at the time didn't believe in the steps. He seen me walking around with a 4-step, and he said, put that away. You're going to drink if you do the steps. And I said, I'm drinking anyway. What's it going to hurt me? So I kept writing my list. You know, I did the steps wrong. You know, there's this guy. Some of you guys who listen to tapes might know him. Guy's name is Bob B. He's out of, I think it's like Minnesota or somewhere like that. You know, and he has this little phrase that says, any step worth doing is a step worth doing wrong. And I believe that. Because in here it tells me God doesn't make too hard terms for those who seek. I did them wrong. But I did them. You know, I started off with a nightly review. I didn't start off with the first step. I started off with a nightly review. I started looking at my day. And I would ask God to take it away. Well, I'd ask myself, do I want to give this up? And then I would ask him to take it away if it was something that I was willing to give up. So I did 10, and then I did 6, and then I did 7. And then I would pray, you know, something like a third step. You know, I have no idea what I'm doing. Please help me. And eventually I started writing a 4-step. So I did it all backwards, but the intent was there and the desire was there and the want to seek this power was there. I used to think that I hated the Salvation Army because I was in the Sally and I'm not a religious person. I still ain't. I'm still not to this day. But I resented them a lot because when I showed up there, you know, they threatened to cut my hair and they told me I had to wear a tie and, you know, I had to go to chapel and wear this suit and stuff. And I'm not about that. You know, I walked into the rooms wearing overalls and a tie-dye and no shoes. You know, it's like, you know, that's just who I am. And people who wore, you know, ties and, you know, jackets and things like that, I stayed away from. I gravitated towards the dude that had the Harley and all the ink and, you know, and that's what I identified with. But I realized this just a few years ago, that the Sally saved my life. Because the one thing that I learned in the Sally was that if you want to get sober, you got to find God. That's what they drilled that into my head. And I'll say the same thing to everybody in here. If you want to get sober, you got to find a higher power. You got to find a power greater than yourself. It don't have to be my God. It don't have to be anybody else's God, but it's got to be something that you buy into. My God's name is Sam. It's an acronym. It stands for Sure Ain't Me. And I've been using that since I've been sober, and it works. But back to, you know, the beginning in early recovery, I stumbled across this this passage. I don't know how I found it, but it just showed up one day. It was probably when I was looking at this nightly review thing. But it's what gave me the motivation or the drive, because everything that I had heard before, I had heard people talk about, you know, holding on to their seat and just getting through. And I had heard people talking about, you know, being miserable, but not, you know, not picking up no matter what. And I was like, if I'm going to be like that, you know, I'm not going to stick around. That's just not who I am. You know, I'm comfortable under bridges. I'm comfortable living in the park. You know, in early recovery, that was one of the things I had to let go of. Not because I was going to die, but because I couldn't live sober and do that. Because I wanted to. I didn't want to pay bills. I didn't want to go to work. I didn't want to have an apartment. I wanted to live that gypsy, deadhead lifestyle and just not get loaded on a daily basis. You know, so I came across this paragraph, and it says, "We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. I'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil as if from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally, and I will find that this has happened automatically. I will see that my new attitude towards liquor has been given me without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it, neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for me. I'm neither cocky, nor am I afraid. That is my experience. That is how I react, so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition." And that is my experience. That's how I live my life today. That's how I deal with alcohol and other non-conference approved substances. You know, because if I was one of those people who just had to get through a day, I wouldn't be here. I would not be here. I needed to have that thought plucked out of my head and taken away, because I'm the guy that uses no matter what. No consequence has ever deterred me from using. It just doesn't work. You know, I'm not afraid of consequences. You know, they used to try and scare me in the beginning and tell me, you know, the end result is jails, institutions, and death. And it's like, I've been there. I've done that. I'm not afraid of that. That doesn't scare me. What scares me is being sober and not being able to live life. You know, what scares me is walking into a corner store. I'm sure you guys got one. I had this store. It was like two blocks from my house. I knew the owner. I knew his wife. I knew his kids. I talked to him every day. But I'd go in there first thing in the morning, and I'm like this. You know, my head's down. I'm looking at my feet. I grab my six-pack. I hand him the money, and I shuffle out. 10 minutes later, I come back in after drinking that six-pack, and I'm, yay, life is awesome. You know, I can talk. I can speak. But prior to that first one in me, I can't function. I don't know how. I don't know how to interact with other people. I remember sitting in a meeting. I had just gotten out of detox, because detox isn't the hard part for me. You know, putting down the drink is not the problem. It's keeping it down. That hard part for me is sitting in a meeting and feeling like I'm a hollowed out egg. And if you touch me, I'm going to shatter into a million pieces. I can't live that way. I need a solution that's much more powerful, much more tangible than don't drink and go to meetings.
Yeah.
That guy, Bill, I've been very fortunate. I've stumbled across a lot of really wise people over the years. And some of the stuff I picked up on, a lot of it I disregarded until I was backed into a corner and then I had to use it. But Bill told me that the original slogan, the don't drink and go to meeting slogan, he said back in the 50s, because this dude was like 2 days older than dirt, and he was sober back then, you know, and it was like, he said the original slogan was only by the grace of God, I don't drink and I can go to a meeting today. That made me think. That made me kind of question a lot of the stuff that I was hearing. It made me do the research. It made me look into the book and see what the book actually said. And one of my grand sponsors used to tell me, don't let anybody read your big book for you. You know, don't, just because somebody's sitting in the room and they got some time and they're spouting some good shit, don't take that as fact. Look in the book. See if it's there. See if that information is really there. Because this works. That shit you tell me, it may work. But if it's your opinion, I don't know. This is proven to work. This worked for me. And I'm the guy who gets I drink no matter what. No matter what. So I started going through this process. And for me, I'm one of these guys. I don't want to say this the wrong way, but I don't believe in one and done. For those of you who can do the one and done thing, great. I'm not that well. I went through the first 9 steps. I started living 10, 11, and 12, and I'm all clean, and life is great, and you know that stuff is gone, and I miss a nightly review, and then I miss a 10 step here and there, and then I start slacking. And I wake up in the morning, and normally it's like, hey, what do you got for me? I'm going to go about doing that. And one morning I wake up, I got this. You know, that's who I am. I miss a little bit, and I start veering off the path, and I don't even realize that I am. I don't even realize that I'm off the path. It usually requires like a 2x4 upside the back of the head for me to realize that I'm off the beam. And it's the God's honest truth. You know, it's like, you know, me and Lauren were talking about this earlier. You know, it's like, I think the reason that she found me was because she's just like me. I don't give anything up because of virtue. I don't. I give stuff up because I ran it till the wheels fell off, until, you know, it was ground into the ground. And even then I don't give it up. God strips it from me. You know what I mean? That's what happens for me. I wish I was better than that. I wish that I could, you know, wake up and say, here you go. I'm going to be this, you know, sunbeam for Jesus. That's not who I am. I struggle with every defect. I struggle with every shortcoming. I've fallen short and I've done everything wrong. But I kept going back to this power. I kept seeking this power because I know that that's where the answer is. I know that the answer is in the power. And I continue to try and seek it on a daily basis. Even when I fail. You know? Even when I royally fail, which some of you guys have seen me do it. You know, it's a scary thing. So this one and done thing for me, it doesn't work. So I've gone through the process of the first 9 steps about 18 times. You know, I continually do it. You know, I was told, again, once a year. Yeah, I'm sober 23 years. I don't follow directions very well. I don't do it once a year. I do it when the shit hits the fan. And I will go through this and I will have a new experience with this power. And in the beginning, it was almost a sprint. You know, and I highly suggest that. You know what I mean? I won't tell you to take your time. Easy does it. You know what? Blast through it as quick as you can, and you're gonna miss shit. You're gonna do it again in 6 months. Because I needed the relief in the beginning. I needed that boot off my neck. You know, for me, the obsession wasn't lifted the first time through. I went through the first 12 steps. My first 60 days of recovery, I wanted to get high every day, all day long. And then I put pen to paper. And I started writing a 4-step. And it started being a couple times a week. And then I shared it with my sponsor. And it stopped being a couple times a week, and it started being a couple times a month. And then I started knocking on doors and making amends to people that, you know, that were off of that inventory piece. And it stopped being a couple times a month, and it started to be every so often. But it wasn't gone. And then I stumbled across this guy, and he was doing a book study in his living room. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. And I sat down, and I actually got somebody to guide me through this a little bit. And the thought went away. Now, it's returned. But it's returned 4 times in 22 years. It's returned 4 times in 22 years, and it was for no more than 10 seconds. You know, the most recent was really powerful for me. It was probably the most intense because, you know, the 2 times in the middle, the first time I wanted to drink, I got in a fight with my girlfriend at the time. And I screw this, I'm out of here, I'm gonna go get drunk. And I get in my van, and I'm living on Staten Island, and I'm driving down Highland Boulevard, and I'm supposed to make a right, and I accidentally made a left. I was all caught up in my head, and I was, you know, twisting and turning, and I'm planning my run here. And I pulled into a parking lot, and there's all these AA bumper stickers. And I was like, ah, shit. You know, and I got yanked out of that moment. You know, I don't know if anybody's ever experienced that, but I got yanked out of that moment. That obsession was on me. It was the only time the obsession has ever been on me that I actually got pulled out of it. Because when that obsession is on me, I'm done. I'm already there. I'm already doing it. But this time I got yanked out because, you know, God made me make a left. I don't know why. I don't know how. But he did. And I showed up in this parking lot, and I walk into this meeting, and I started on this journey of not wanting to anymore. And the 2 times after that happened, they weren't, I want to drink. It wasn't the thought to actually drink. It was, let me do something else that's destructive. One was, I wanted to shoot myself in the head. You know, one was, I want to make my own beer. You know, well, they had a contest. It was on TV, and it was Sam Adams Brew Your Own Beer contest. And it's like, I know what good beer should taste like. I don't have to drink it. Yeah. That's me thinking, you know. And what I found was I looked back over the course of time, and I've been slacking. I hadn't been doing the things that I needed to do. But this last time, it was probably the most powerful because it was actually I wanted to drink. I didn't care anymore. And I'm sitting in my truck and I'm crying. I'm losing my mind. I'd burned my life to the ground. I destroyed everything around me. And the thought came, you know, I really want to get fucked up. And I hadn't had that thought in a really long time. And it was just that phrase that kind of went through my head. And then immediately the thought showed up. It says, what are you, insane? Call Tarek. It's like, Tarek? Who's that? You know, and it took me a minute. I had met this dude about 2.5 years before at a conference down in Georgia. You know, he made an impression on me, obviously. But, you know, I wasn't thinking about him. That, to me, that's God showing up in my life. And he did. He showed up, and he told me to call this dude. And I called this guy, and he brought me through the steps again. And what I realized after going through this process, that for about 6 months prior to, I'd been living on self-will. And I didn't know it. I'd been talking all kinds of good stuff. I'm saying all the right things, you know. It's all about God. It's all about the steps. It's all in this book. But what I'm doing is I'm worshiping the message. I'm worshiping the literature. I'm worshiping my ego and how you see me. You know, if you think I'm okay, I must be okay. And I'm not worshiping the power. I'm not plugged into the power. And it blew my mind. And at about the very same time, I remember I'm sitting, like I said, I was working in treatment. And I'm sitting in this group, and this dude's doing this meditation group. And I'm just sitting in on it, and I decide to do it with everyone else. And he's talking about visualizing this piece of art and I don't know what you call it. What's like a statue or whatever. And he's like, visualize it and walk around it and see every little twist and turn and cranny and all the detail and the beauty of it. And then he throws in this, you know, remember your last run statement. And, you know, and my stomach flipped, and my immediate thought was, oh, I got to go help somebody. And what I realized is that I'm using that line in the book. There's a line in the book that says, nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And I'm using that. That's the human power that I'm relying on at this point. I'm not relying on God. I'm relying on my ability to be effective and help others. And that's a human power. You know, it says when all else fails, intensive work. When all else fails. So I'm supposed to go to God first. I'm supposed to do my step work first. I'm supposed to see what's wrong with me first. I'm supposed to work my 9 steps or my 10 and 11 or whatever it is first, and then go out and carry the message. Then go out and work with others when I'm spiritually grounded and I'm fit. Not when I'm sick. Not when I'm uncomfortable. Not use working with others as a way to get me through the day. And I'd been doing that. And that's where I started making that connection. That it's my ego. And it's how I look and how I present to you that is my God at that point. And it was a really scary proposition because, you know, like I said earlier, I'm a sick pup. I don't know if I'm an average alcoholic. I probably am. But I will take a beautiful spiritual principle of working with others, and I will pervert it into an addiction. You know what I mean? I will pervert it into a way to distance myself from God. So, you know, it's interesting because I shared this with my sponsor. I had talked about it, and he had me, you know, do some inventory on it. I hadn't done a principles inventory since I was, like, new. You know, because, you know, in the beginning, I did those principles that I was raised with. All those ones that I had issue with, you know, I had resentment with principles, you know, like the Ten Commandments or, you know, the stuff that was drilled into my head as a little kid. And for some reason, I stopped doing principle inventory because I thought I got okay with that stuff. And he made me do a principle inventory on the stuff that I learned here in the rooms because that's the stuff that I was using and that's the stuff I was relying on and that's the stuff that was actually killing me. Because I was putting the cart before the horse. I was putting the cart before the horse. God's got to come first. Then I can do that stuff. Then I can utilize these beautiful spiritual principles of helping others or honesty. You know, can you be honest if you're lying to yourself? I know I can't. You know, if I'm telling myself some bullshit, I can sound like I'm being honest. I can look honest. But if it's not based in true honesty, it's not. So I needed to look at that. And I'm still trying to, you know, fix, manage, and control my process through the steps at that point. And my sponsor was great. He knew exactly how to mess with me, you know, because I'm thinking, okay, I got to do this 4-step, and I got to do this 5th step with him, and then I can get to the other side and get some relief and be okay. And he didn't do that. He didn't let me. You know, he didn't let me move from 5 to 9 to the Freedom in 10 and 11 real quickly like I was used to, like I expected. He made me sit on step 6. Now again, I'm a wuss. I don't last very long. But he said, make this list. You know, you've got this list of defects and shortcomings that you've noticed in your inventory. And sit with them and watch them. And when it gets bad enough. Oh yeah, and I'm supposed to write my own version of the 7-step prayer at that point. Put it in my own language. So I wrote the prayer thinking, okay, I'll do this in, you know, and but I'm supposed to sit with it. And I sat with it. And I don't know, it was maybe a week. I went to bed perfectly fine. I went to bed happy. I went to bed peaceful. And I woke up psychotic. Yeah, I'm driving the kids to school because we missed the bus. And I want to, like, kill people on the road and stuff. And, you know, and I'm losing my mind. I was like, what happened? So I call him up. He's like, dude, you know, I'm a mess. I want to kill people. And he's like, good, it's time to say the prayer. Because I needed that. I needed that gift of desperation to quickly move through it. For me, my ego will attach to it. I will rely on the process, not on the God behind the process, to experience it. Because I'm one of those people. I will worship this book. I will worship these steps. I will worship my work with others. I will worship anything except God. Except God. I don't know why that is, you know. That's just in my nature. You know, it's who I am. So I say this 7-step prayer. And I was given a moment. I was given a bit of relief with it. And I made my amends list. And I had to go make some amends. And it was really difficult because, you know, at the time, I was, I don't know, 17 years sober or something like that. And it really sucks making amends, you know, when you've got almost 2 decades of recovery. You know, I should know better by now. But I had to make these amends and I had to be honest and I had to shut up and not justify. I had to say exactly what I did and ask them, what can I do to set this right? And is there anything that I've missed? And I was told those things too. And I made those amends. And I'm still thinking in the back of my head, I'm going to get this freedom place. I'm going to get to those 10-step promises, right? You know, I'm going to get that, yay, I'm floating on a cloud. I'm going to be Teflon again, and life was going to be great. No. God had other plans for me. I'm in steps 10 and 11. And I'm not getting that fluffy place. I'm not getting that fuzzy, nice, warm, everything's great, nothing affects me place. What I'm getting is pain. What I'm getting is irritability. What I'm getting is self-pity. What I'm getting is anger. What I'm getting is all these negative feelings and things based on what I've done, what I've experienced, the wreckage that I currently got, and the daily stuff that I have to deal with. But what I was given was the ability to pause. I didn't feel the need to run and go help somebody to avoid that feeling. And that was something new for me. Because I was so used to feeling that feeling and then running over, hey, how you doing? Are you okay? Can I help you? To get out of that feeling. And I was given that ability to pause. And I had this little mantra that started working through my head. I don't think that I thought it up. I think it just kind of appeared there. It was watch, experience, identify, and pray. Watch, experience, identify, and pray. And I walked through each and every day with this mantra going through my head. And I would have these bad feelings, quote unquote, bad feelings. I would have these uncomfortable feelings. I would have these good feelings. I would have all the feelings that we're supposed to have. And I would get watch, experience, identify, and pray. And my sponsor is giving me a hard time at that point. He's like, yeah, you got to go out and find sponsees. You got to go work with others. You're doing 10 and 11. Go help people. I said, there ain't nobody around. Nobody's walking into my path. Because I've never been one, well, I shouldn't say never. In recent years, I've never been one to chase sponsees. You know, I went through that in those early years, you know, but I've gotten to a place with my recovery. It's like, I'm offering, I'm there, I'm willing, but I'm not chasing you down if you don't want it, you know, and there was nobody around me that wanted it. It was weird. They just like, they were there, I'm sure, you know what I mean? But they were over at that meeting, not at this one. You know, they were over in this house, not this one. You know, they weren't there. They weren't walking into my path, and that's what God did for me. God removed the newcomer from my path for 9 months and allowed me to sit in meditation with watch. And it blew my mind. I sat for 9 months in a walking meditation, recognizing and identifying and praying through my feelings, which I never did. I never did. I always avoided them. You know, I enjoyed the happy ones, but those uncomfy ones, man, you know, I didn't like those. I avoid them. And it changed me tremendously. It gave me this new understanding of this path, this process, this journey, and it, you know, it's interesting because I used to struggle with meditation. I've always been one of those people who struggled with meditation. I've got that brain that like never shuts off. I had a moment. I was I think 5 years sober, you know, where I did this fifth step and my sponsor sent me out into the woods to go do my quiet hour and I prayed in the woods and, you know, I got in my car and I drove an hour home and I forgot to turn on the radio. But that was a moment. That was a moment of that peace and quiet inside of my brain. I could never do that, you know, sit still and breathe meditation. I always did an Oxford group type meditation where I would be, you know, writing stuff down, or I always did, you know, a walking meditation where I was doing something and I was engaged because I needed to, you know, find a way to stop the mind. You know, listen to Pink Floyd. That was a good meditation for me in early recovery. You know, I had to do something. But you know what? After that experience that I had with Watch, I was able to sit and not turn on the TV. I was able to sit and really find that quiet inside, which I always wanted. You know, not for nothing. That's why I drank. You know, I like that place where, you know, heart and lungs working, nothing else. You know, that's me. I'm on the floor. Life is good, you know, because I want that quiet place. And I sought that in my active, you know, drinking. And I found it for the first time in recovery because God removed all this stuff from me, you know. Like I was saying before, as you know, I don't give nothing up because of virtue. God pulls stuff from me. He pulls every tool that I will put in front of him. He yanks it out of my life. And that's what wakes me up to realize that I need to seek this power. I rode that one for a while. You know, that experience I rode for a while. And today, I have this this, I'm in the process of doing something new, and I'm not quite sure what it looks like yet, because it's unfolding in front of me, you know. I'm very much a believer that I don't make decisions in my life anymore. I really don't, you know. I get moved. I look for the road signs, and that's what it really is. And, you know, the best example, the way I like to, you know, and the analogy I like is, you know, I'm a driver. I like to drive. I like going on road trips. I'll drive to friggin' anywhere. You know, we used to do it in early recovery before the kids showed up, and I would say, which way, right or left, and we just drive. You know, and I love doing that. And if I'm present in that moment, I see the road signs. I see where I need to go. I could see the turn a quarter mile away or a half a mile away. But if the kids are in the back seat screaming at me and I'm yelling at them, I miss those signs. Okay? And that's the way my life is, though. My internal life. If I'm quiet and if I'm present and I'm grounded inside of me, I see these giant billboards and these huge road signs that tell me which way to go. But if I'm caught up in the chaos and the chatter of a thousand monkeys is on me and I'm all over the place, I miss everything. And I make wrong turns all the time. So the goal for me recently, in the past few years, is to continually stay present. You know, this is new. I like this thing. This saves my ass all the time. And it's something really simple. It's just one bead, breathe in, breathe out. Two beads, breathe in, breathe out. And just keep working through it. And it's just, it brings me back to the moment. It brings me back to where I need to be. Brings me where my feet are. So, you know, I don't know where the journey is going to bring me. I don't know where this process is going to take me. But it ain't up to me. I'm along for the ride. It's an amazing thing because, you know, I wanted to stop going to jail. That's what I wanted. I wanted to stop going to jail. I didn't want to, you know, be that guy sitting on the park bench, you know, with the bottle of wine, because, you know, I'm a high class drunk. I like Mad Dog, you know. I didn't want to be that guy sitting with the bottle of Mad Dog 2020 in the park near the meeting, just in case it got cold, so I could go in and get a cup of coffee. Because not for nothing, that's who I was at the end. I wasn't in, but I wasn't out. I was stuck in both worlds. And that's the most miserable place to be. You know, not for nothing. You know, if you're in that world, if you're stuck between the two, you got to make a choice. You got to either come in or go out. You know, I hate to say it like that, but, you know, I had to go out. I had to continue to run until I was beaten. And I was willing to jump in and say, I don't care what you tell me to do. I'm going to do it. I got no choice no more. You know, and I don't have to be that guy anymore. I love this thing about being recovered. You know, because it's this big controversial kind of statement, you know, because I work in rehab and they get all bent at me when I identify as recovered. And it doesn't mean I'm cured. It doesn't mean that I'm well. It doesn't mean that I'll never drink again. It means that I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. It's that simple. I don't have to drink anymore physically. It's out of my system. It takes 72 hours to recover physically from alcohol. You know, 72 hours, all the booze is out of my system. I no longer have that physical craving for it. There's no more compulsion. Mentally, well, that took me a little while. You know, It took me a little while with the booze. And that's the one that I'm focused on with this. You know, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm not a recovered idiot. You know, I still make stupid mistakes. I still, you know, but you know what? The ones that I've screwed up until this point, God willing, I'm recovered from them. You know, I've gotten to that place where I've been restored to sanity with those other areas, those outside, you know, issues or whatever it is, whatever you want to call that stuff, all those shortcomings and defects that I used, I burned them. I ran them into the ground. I'm scared of what's going to come next, you know, because it doesn't feel like there's anything left. But I'm sure there is. And I just gotta keep showing up. And God will show me what's in front of me. God will show me what's next. You know. But not for nothing, I'm starting to ramble. So I'm going to flip this, and I'm going to give you your coin.